everyone. My name is Haley Stogan, and I'm happy to welcome you to this year's Native Youth Program. My team and I present to you our podcast called Relaying Our Roots on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC's Vancouver campus, located on the unceded and unsurrendered lands of the Musqueam peoples. The NYP is a work-learn program that is held at the Museum of Anthropology here on the UBC campus every summer. This year is the program's 44th year, making it MOA's longest-running public program. This year's theme is connection to the land and what it looks like for us. While our paths have been different, our journeys have overlapped. So, of course, our podcast has a similar outcome. We all took different approaches. That's why some of our stories are standalone, while others are more conversational. We humans are all in relation to one another, but also other living things, including the land. Through reminiscing our personal stories, remembering traditional practices, and reflecting on the future, we are relaying our roots.
Hello everyone, my name is Sienna Matheson. I am 15 years old and I am a member of the Musqueam Coast Salish Nation. On my mom's side, I am Mennonite and my family had settled in Manitoba after immigrating from Russia, which makes me mixed with white and Indigenous heritage. On my paternal side, I am Indigenous to Musqueam. When thinking about sustainability, for me, I try to be sustainable through recycling, using public transit, using a water bottle, eating at home, and making many other small contributions that I can. For context, my Musqueam Nation has been stewards of the land since time immemorial, which is important to me because my community has used sustainable land practices for many, many years. I try to prioritize sustainability because I know the importance of this land, especially for myself as an Indigenous person who has had family that has been living here forever. I feel like one of the reasons Indigenous nations were so sustainable before and even at the beginning of colonization is because they lived off of the land and used all their own resources. Unfortunately, for our generation, that is very difficult to do. But something I try to remember is take what you need and only what you need and leave the rest, which is a practice in many Indigenous communities. In our society, there is so much food waste, fast fashion, etc. I think it is still crucial to make an effort to learn from Indigenous practices of sustainability, especially for future generations, and we all need to learn from them. As someone who comes from two very different sides, being both a white settler and an Indigenous person, it is shown in two very different sustainable practices. It is a very colonial idea to be unsustainable and wasteful, but it is Indigenous practices of sustainability that can be used to help climate change. Because my reserve sits within the larger city of Vancouver, it is still dealing with the aftermath of colonialism and the impacts of resource extraction, which I hope someday can return to more sustainable ways. In relation to the land, I am trying to open myself up to more of Indigenous cultures and practices, learning from my grandparents and elders, and being more involved in the stuff on my reserve. An example of being more sustainable on my reserve is when I delivered produce grown on the UBC farm to elders. I was thinking about me, myself, is related to the land, and I did some research and interviewed my dad about my great-grandpa Robert Point. He was a very talented fisherman and passed on his knowledge to my dad. I come from a very long line of fishermen, and my grandpa Robert was one of the greatest fishermen from Musqueam. He fished up and down the coast for almost all of his life. He still holds the record set, which was over 1,600 fish in one set. It's called the border setup in the river's inlet. My dad said, and I quote, "He could read the water so well, it was like he knew when the fish were coming into each arm of the river, and he knew where the fish were going, so when they went out into the ocean, he could tell by looking at the fish and the scale pattern where they were returning to." One year, they even had the Department of Fisheries and Oceans asking him about his knowledge of the fish. The Point family lineage, my family, has been living on this land, Musqueam land, for over 3,000 years traced back. Living off the river, the ground, the trees, and everything surrounding. Sometimes I wonder, just because I appear white, does that really invalidate over 3,000 years of Indigenous knowledge and history passed down to me? My life and personal identity has grown because of my continued learning and understanding of my culture. I am hopeful that Indigenous cultural practices and teachings of the land and the river will always last and be a part of my indigeneity and journey.
Hello, everyone. My name is Amaya Campbell. I am Coast Salish from Musqueam on my mom's side and Zimbabwean African on my father's. I am 16 years old and I'm currently attending school at Little Flower Academy. I am a part of the Native Youth Program at MOA. This is my third year with the program, which makes me this year's senior alumni. Today, I will be talking about the importance of hair in Black and African culture. So most of the beliefs and stereotypes involving Black people and Afro-textured hair was created during the transatlantic slave trade. Between the 16th and 19th century, the texture of Afro hair was used as justification for the enslavement of Africans. Black people were seen as wild and untamed, and this was said mainly because of our natural hair textures and styles. In African society, especially before the slave trade, hair was so much more than just choosing a style. By looking at your hair, someone could tell your tribe, your identity, whether you're rich or poor, and even your fertility. African women shaved their heads as they mourned the loss of a loved one. Throughout American history, Black people's hair texture has been seen as dirty, untamed, and unprofessional. Black people have been fired, dismissed, and alienated for showing their natural hair. Black hairstyles have been used to symbolize Black liberation, connection to African ancestry, and much more. Afropics became a hallmark for Black culture during the 1960s and 70s as a response to political and social unrest. Hairstyles like the Afro emerged and popularized the comb. So I just wanted to read a little example of the discrimination that Black people face for their hair. So Andrew Johnson, a 16-year-old African-American boy, was told by a white referee that his hair covering doesn't conform to the rulebook and that he could either cut off his dreadlocks or forfeit. Soon, a viral video of a white female trainer cutting off Johnson's hair transformed the teenager into a new symbol of racial tension in America. The Crown Act is a law that forbids discrimination based on texture and hairstyles. Crown stands for Create a Respectful and Open Workplace for Natural Hair. Hair discrimination impacts Black people, especially Black women and girls in schools and workplaces who wear hairstyles such as locks, braids, twists, Bantu knots, afros, and natural hair. They are punished by discriminatory workplace and school dress codes and grooming policies. During the African slave trade, Dutch slave owners forcibly transported people from West Africa to colonies in modern-day Brazil and throughout America. Enslaved people found ways to keep themselves and their cultures alive. Rice was braided into the hair of African women to serve as sustenance on their way to enslavement. Cornrows hid rice and even seeds as they traveled with no belongings through the Middle Passage. When it comes to Afro-textured hair, it is so much more than just hair. It is deeply woven into our ancestral history, and it is spiritual and cultural, and it is a big part of most Black people's identity. Hi, I'm Amai.
Hi, I'm Sienna.
So we're both Musqueam, and we're also cousins.
We're cousins!
Yeah.
My great-grandpa Robert, who I talked about a bit, well, a lot, actually, in my podcast, and her great-grandma
Grace
were siblings.
Yeah.
And we actually just found that out during this program. So, yeah.
I knew.
Oh, well, I didn't know. I knew we were related. I just didn't know how close.
Didn't know how close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cuzzy. And we were talking about, like, the spectrum thing, like how we're both on very different sides, me being like a white passing native and her being a Black passing native, but like how we both meet in the middle and even are related in Indigenous ways. You'd call everyone your cousin even if you're not that related. So the fact that we can actually trace back how related we are makes us
and so easily
cousins.
Too, it's not like oh,
our great grandpa and we're cousins with our this grandpa. No, it's actually just like easily to trace it back. And even though I may be like more disconnected to my Indigenous culture than Amaya is, it's kind of interesting how we're both like related.
Well, for me, it's an interesting life because I'm minorities on both sides of my family, so I feel like I say it like as a joke, like it's a double homicide, because like I come from two backgrounds that are have faced more discrimination throughout history than any other group of people. So it's difficult because I look like every other Black girl, but my, like, on the inside, like, I grew up in a very Native household. My mom's Native, and
I think that everyone takes on their mom's traditions and cultures more than they would their dad. So I grew up with all of my Native friends. I had very few Black friends. Actually, I had no Black friends up until maybe like the ninth grade. Because my dad, he never really talked about our culture. Like, my dad grew up in Africa, in Zimbabwe, and he's like fluent in his language, but he never spoke in his language to me or my sister growing up. He never like shared his culture or traditions with us. My dad like grew up, because in Africa there's also reserves. My dad grew up on a reserve, but I never knew that. Like, he doesn't share any information about our culture. And like, I think it's because it's like internalized racism or something. It's hard because I look very Black, but I don't know anything about my Black side.
Yeah.
You know?
That like really, I totally agree with that. And since my mom, yeah, is white, she grew up in Abbotsford, like, very white. I don't know what else to say. I guess like I take on more of my white side than my Indigenous side, and like growing up on the reserve, it was kind of hard to be involved with my culture when I was like living with my mom, and she's very white and she also didn't know much about my Indigenous culture. And then the once in a while times when I like would go to my dad's house and stuff, it wasn't really a big topic to like talk about our Indigenousness. It was just like spending time with my dad. So growing up on the reserve, it almost didn't feel like I grew up on the reserve, because I lived in a household with my mom and she's white, and then I'd go to my dad's and he's Indigenous, but we never really talked about it. And like, yeah, I do stuff on my reserve, like cultural stuff, once in a while, and I'm trying to be more involved with that. But yeah, I do take after my mom's white side more than my dad's Indigenous side.
Yeah, I feel the same, because, like, everything in my life is, like, involves, like, being Native.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even just the small things with the way we eat, what me and my family do on the weekend, like, what my mom's doing in her free time, like, my mom does beading, and then it's just, like, random things. Like, even, like, throughout the winter, like, we have certain cultural practices that we're doing, like, on Saturdays and Sundays, and, like, it's just... It really affects my lifestyle.
Yeah.
On my Native side. But I don't look Native. I look Black. So talking back about, like, how I receive discrimination for both sides, I look Black, but also everybody that I was around in schools and everything knew I was Native. So I'd still get just as much discrimination for being Native. Like, even when I got into my high school, which is a pretty prestigious school, and it's really difficult to get into, I had girls in my class who didn't get into the school saying the only reason I got into the school is because I was Indigenous, that they felt bad for me, and that I was poor, and the only reason I'm going is because I was funded. And it's just, like, it's annoying, because it's, like, discrediting all of the work that I put in to get into that school, and they're saying that I have all this privilege because I'm Native and they feel bad for me, but like, I have to work twice as hard as the white girl beside me.
Yeah. And for me, when I got into my other prestige different school, but they were both hard private schools, I worked really hard to get in. Like, I did all the tests and everything, and so I've always been hearing my whole life, oh, you're barely Native, you're basically white, even from my Native relatives. And then I get into this really good school, and one of my very close friends, my best friend at the time, came up to me and said, how'd you get in? So I went over like the whole procedure, because that's what I thought she was asking. She goes, no, I mean, did you get in because you're Native and they want diversity? And it's kind of interesting for me, because like, this my entire life, it's like, you're barely Native until they want to use it against me. I've been too white this all this time, and then I get into this good school, and now it's, oh, you're Native, and that's the only reason you got in.
With the school thing, it like that little incident in grade 7, like, has led to so many issues for me, because I'm constantly questioning my intelligence.
Me too.
Because they, like, even in, like, even this year in the 10th grade, I had a girl in my class say that I talk about being Indigenous too often. Like, oh, Amaya just talks about being Indigenous. Nobody cares. People feel bad for her. That's why she gets away with so many things. The only reason teachers like her is because she's Native and she can, like, represent the school. But it's just, like, even just in the 10th grade, like, I thought that the school, like, accepted me for who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they don't. And this was coming from a girl who I thought was my friend and who I was always nice to. But even now, I'm still questioning my intelligence. I'm like, is she right? because I find that my school also, like, treats me as, like, their token Native kid, like, with different assemblies and everything, like, making me do, like, a land acknowledgement or introducing myself, and it's just, it's annoying.
For me, like, the whole education thing, it's always been kind of an internalized thing. Like, I did this assignment once in my English class about my identity, and I talked about being Native, and then my friend came up to me, and she's like, "You're Native? I always thought you were white." But then, like, I always think back to that time where that person was like, "The only reason you got in because you're Native." And I always think, maybe I'm not doing as well in these assignments and stuff. It's because I got in because I was Native. And I always, like, kind of internalize that. Like, oh, I'm not as smart as these people. I only got in because I'm Native. But then the fact is, no one even knows I'm Native. So I at least have to be smart enough for people to recognize me as, like, their own being white. And so, like, it's also just confusing for me because no one knows I'm Native at my school, and I've been trying to be open about that, but no one recognizes it because I'm white passing. And then I told my gym teacher once I did this project on it, and she's like, "Oh, if you ever want to speak to me about that, I'd be glad for you to do an assembly or something." It's like they want, like, once they find out you're Native, they start treating you differently. Yeah, they're like, they want, like, you to show off about it. They want you to be that, as you said, token Native kid. And so even though I've been white my whole life and everyone never knew I was Native, once they know, it's like, okay, now you're the Native kid.
Yeah, because this is, like, the third podcast I've done. Mm-hmm. But the first podcast I did with NYP, like, my school showed it to the entire school during an assembly, and I was like, oh, okay. But after that, I noticed that teachers started treating me differently. Like, even in this past year, my PE teacher, we were learning about lacrosse, and I mean, I think she was trying to be respectful, but she asked me to help her teach the lesson about lacrosse because it's a, because it originated from, like, Indigenous people, and I was like, I know absolutely nothing about lacrosse, but it's interesting that you think I do, because just because I'm Native doesn't mean I play lacrosse or know how to teach a lesson about lacrosse. Like, it was just, it was so random. I mean, the way she said it was very respectful. She was like, "Oh, I don't want to, you know, offend anyone, so if any of my information is incorrect, like, please, like, you know, let me know." But she actually talked to me privately. It was so, it was funny.
Yeah, again, like, one time I was in my English class, and my teacher, this was at the very beginning of the year in grade 8, we had this lesson on, like, Indigenous studies, and this was when, like, no one knew because, you know, very white passing. She goes, "We are all colonizers. We all have colonized a land. We're not from this land." And I'm just sitting there, my friend who knew, staring at me, and I'm like, well, this is interesting. So I came up to her after class, and I was like, "I'm actually Indigenous. I'm from here. I'm Musqueam. Indigenous, this land that we're on for this school is where I'm from." And it's just like, okay, you didn't bother to ask anyone if they were Indigenous before calling us all colonizers? Like, what? Mm-hmm. Just because none of us look stereotypically Native doesn't mean that none of us are Native. And so because I was the only person in that class, the only person in my school that's Native, doesn't mean you should be, like, categorizing us all as not Native. And it's just, like, so weird.
Yeah, I think intelligence is so much more than academics, because, like, I can do academics, but it is not my, like, forte. Yeah. Like, I am much smarter with just, like this, like, having conversations with people. My social skills are, like, I've been told that they're, like, above my age level.
Yeah.
Like, the way I'm able to communicate with people and, like, hold a conversation and, like, you know, my, like, mature, like, I'm a lot more mature with very intense topics than mm-hmm. a lot of kids my age,
yeah.
which is very powerful, but people wouldn't see that as being powerful. Like, if I'm getting a C in math, but I'm, like, super smart and, like I said, like, holding conversations and, like, just, you know, emotional maturity, they're still gonna think I'm stupid.
Yeah. It's just, like, it kind of seems like no matter what you do, once people know you're Native, you're always considered less than. Even if you're, like, better in all those topics that you just explained, just because you got a C in math, then people are going to think you're less than them. And it may be because you're Native, it may be because you're Black. Like, it honestly doesn't matter once they find out you're something else other than, like, the stereotypical white person. It's like you're less than them.
Yeah.
I remember in ICS, in grade 5, they had, like, the special math kids, so they put everyone who was, like, bad at math in the extra class to, like, help them. Every single kid that was Native in my class was in that extra math class. And even for me, I was good at math, but it's like they just chose all the Native kids, put them in this class that what you're doing is bad, and it was just like so
the, like, you know, the special help.
Yeah, the special help. And even though I was good at math, they just put every single native kid in my class in that class. Even though I was good at math, I could have taught any of those kids math at that time, but like it was just another form of, like, I think racism. And like everyone at my old school knew I was native. Like, they made me do this presentation in grade 7 about being native. Because, like, it's always just, like, the token native kid. And even though I present white, once they find out you're native, it's just, like, it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. And sometimes they like to use the more, like, socially acceptable-looking native kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, not to, like, belittle your experience at all, but, like, they'd rather you give a presentation about indigeneity than they would me. They'd rather the white-looking girl do it than, like, the black girl with braids.
No, totally. And like, I'm so grateful for my privilege, like being white passing and everything, and like I totally agree with that. And it's just another form, like, of me not being as indigenous as everyone else, because I know, like, if Amai was in that same class, they would probably choose me, because like, even though I'm like indigenous and I grew up on the reserve, they'd choose me over the kids that I've been friends with my whole life, just because I'm white passing. And so I'm so glad I have more opportunities than the people that I grew up with. But then again, it's like, sometimes I wish I was treated the same as everyone I grew up with.
Yeah, because I can see, like, it sucks because you don't feel like you belong.
Exactly. But, like, that's why I've always wanted to be a politician, because I want to help the kids who didn't have all the advantages that I have, because I grew up with them and I know that it's harder for them, and I want to help as much as I can, and I want to give them a voice that I have always had.
Hi, my name's Anjali. I'm 15 years old, and I'm Anishinaabe from White Earth, Minnesota. I'm also Honduran, and today I'll be talking about who I am in relation to the land. 2 months ago, I watched Conspiracy, a Netflix documentary, and that really got me thinking of how I'm connected to the land. It talks about how we are polluting our ocean, and it gets into how the government is covering up for the fact that they are the main polluters of our land and our water. It's devastating to think about, because they're not only hurting animals, plants, but hurting humans and future generations. As an effort to reduce my carbon footprint, I was a vegetarian for almost a year. The meat industry is the number one contributor to global warming, and although I had to stop due to health reasons, I would really like to do it again one day in my future. And I know that it was hard on my mom, because not only did she have to get meat-free options for me, but also feed my family. I'm so grateful my mom supported my journey as a vegetarian. My family comes from a long line of butchers, and my mom is a big fan of cooking meat. Same with my Hispanic side, as most of the people in my country live in poverty and can only afford to live off meat. I think we need to take a serious action, because if not, our future generations will have nothing to look forward to. I want my future kids to have a good life and not have to worry about their kids. If the generations before us would have known that their actions would affect us in such a negative way, would they make the same choices? They tell our generation to recycle, walk, and use paper straws. But those things aren't going to change over 50 years of pollution. We need to make a bigger and better difference in today's world. There is one company called 4Ocean. They take trash out of the ocean and make them into bracelets. You donate money to the company, and you get a bracelet made out of the recycled plastic. I live in Surrey now, but I grew up 5 minutes away from the ocean for a good chunk of my childhood when I lived in Nanaimo. We would go crabbing all the time, and after I moved away, I realized that I wanted to be a marine biologist. It's hard, though, because I no longer live near the beach. When I did live near the ocean, I would go swimming and have lots of quality time with my family, and I do want to move back there one day. Because my family has always been near the water, and to me, it's my home, and it's my connection to the land.
My name is William. I'm 16. I was born at BC Children's Hospital, then I moved to Burns Lake. I was back and forth between Prince George and the res until I turned 4, and the doctors found out I had leukemia. So they flew me down to Van for better health care, and I had to deal with it for about 4 years. When I turned 8, I got sent into remission, so I don't have cancer anymore. But I have to get checkups every year or two until I'm 18 in case the cancer comes back. I'm from Lake Babi Nation, and I'm part of the Bear Clan. My last name is Rosso, and it comes from my mom's side. It was my great-grandpa's last name, and he was Italian. My other last name is George, and that's from my dad's side. I don't really know much from my dad's side.
Hi, everyone. My name is Seneca Kozar, and I am German and Hoixam First Nation. I also was born in BC Children's Hospital, and I have spina bifida. And so spina bifida is when I was born, I had like a really damaged back. It just went down into my leg, and I'm lucky to not be paralyzed and not being in a wheelchair, which, thank God.
Yeah.
I've always been a determined person. When I was younger, I couldn't walk until I was 4. I've always been determined to do self-improvement and how to get better as a person and also have look better. And I think the gym for me is a go-to because I can always improve myself there to look better and to also have a better mindset. But sometimes it's hard to. I think it's hard because sometimes I don't see myself having results sometimes, but there's always results, even though they're minor.
I've barely seen you in the bathroom. Like, you look
oh,
like,
yeah.
Man.
Thank you. But even though the results might be minor, they're still results.
I sort of grew up on the res, but it wasn't really that long. I only lived at the res for like a year or two. It was just back and forth. When I moved here to Van, after everything, like all my hospital stuff was like sort of done with, we sort of just made the choice to stay in Van for me because there's better education here. Up north, the education is pretty bad. Like, the teachers don't really care. I don't know. And that's why most of my like cousins dropped out. I'm the only one continuing school out of all my cousins. And once I graduate, I feel like I'll be more proud of myself, and I think it'll be more special in a way, because not many kids graduate in my family. And when I graduate, I feel like everybody would be happy.
Yes, same thing happened with me. My mom was forcing me to go to university after high school because she wants me to have a good education as a backup. If I want to do something else, that I would be able to have a steady job in education. And I go to school in Richmond Christian right now, so they're really heavy on academics, but it's kind of hard for me because I'm not 100% focused on education. And so I just like living life instead of just being on the books all day. And so, yeah, most of my family members don't pass high school. And I never lived on res, but I lived, like, every day I would go to my grandpa's, and it would be an open house where a lot of my cousins would come in every day. And so that's how I know most of my family. Yeah, my grandpa, he was a fisherman, and so I wanted to go fishing with him before he died, but sadly he died from cancer in 2017, I believe. It's fine though, but I really want, like, if I had an extra year with him, I would definitely go over how to become a chief and about our family lineage, and about Indigenous politics, because it can get pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to go hunting with my grandpa or fishing. Or at least just, like, spend some kind of time with him before he gets too sick. 'Cause he's not in very good health right now. He's like, his liver's failing, and the doctors say once it fails, and they can't really do nothing about it, he's just gone. Like, I feel bad for him, like, pretty much every day. I always pray for him because of what he has to go through on the daily. And my mom said this is probably going to be his last hunting season, which hit me hard because, like, I never got to spend, like, good quality time with him. And he taught a lot of my cousins and my uncles how to fish and hunt. I just want to experience that kind of experience with him before it's too late, you know?
I got passed down from my dad to how to ride a bike. And so I couldn't ride a bike for so long because I didn't know how to, well, I didn't know how to walk at this point, but it was just harder to bike. And so my dad said, bike. So then I said, I'll give it one more try. And then I had determination to get it down. So the last try, I got it down. And so after that, I actually showed my brother a few years later how to bike. And he's actually not bad. And so another way that I can show, pass down knowledge is that my brother's turning 14 in like a few weeks. And he's going to get a membership at my gym, so I'm going to be able to show him some stuff, like some exercises, and he's willing to get a membership because he wants to spend time with me, which I think is pretty cool. Time is money.
Me and my brothers, like, me and him work out sometimes. He's always telling me to, like, get a gym membership or something because I'm always, like, just at home, like, yeah. I'm not really doing anything all day. Like, I think I'm gonna try and motivate myself to start working out more because whenever I see my brother working out, I'm like, should I ask to join him?
It's not really motivation though. It's just understanding that you should go once, but then, yeah, it's determination, but it's also just drive. It's not just, because motivation can be lost really fast, which I got in the first few months. I got, like, super hyped. But then after that, it just fell apart. But you just have to go in there.
Yeah, I wanted to start working out more because I don't really like the way I look because I feel like I look too skinny.
You just got to eat more.
Yeah, I mean, I try to eat a lot because last year I was pretty chubby, and I just started, like, losing a lot of weight during, like, the summertime, and I was really confused as to why, and no matter how much I ate, like, I could never gain weight back, and it always just bothered me. So whenever I'm thinking about, like, my brother teaching me stuff, I always kind of thought it was cool. Like, I wish I had my own little sibling to teach.
Because, yeah, definitely.
Like, I always wanted a little brother because both my siblings are way older than me. So I never really had, like, that kind of sibling relationship when I was growing up. They're always pretty busy or doing their own thing.
When you're teaching people stuff, you definitely got to have a lot of patience. It's my legs. It's just like you're just given what you've got. I don't see why a lot of people are like, how are you so happy with your disability? And I'm like, it's what I got. It's just, I can't change it. So why do I complain about it? Things could be way worse for me, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You gotta be happy with what you got.
A lot of people ask me, like, sometimes, like, people ask me, like, how did I deal with, like, my cancer? And people ask me, like, if it affected me, like, throughout my life. I mean, I guess it kind of did, but. A lot of people ask me if it, like, affected me mentally. Personally, I don't think it did. It's just, like it happened already. I can't, like, it's the way I was born. Like, I can't change it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I also believe that everyone has a purpose because you're not just put here on this planet for nothing. You gotta have a purpose. And I believe that with my spina bifida, that I have a purpose to motivate other people as well. Like, even sharing this on the podcast, yeah, put here for a reason.
Yeah, sometimes I'd be thinking the same because, like, I don't know, sometimes I think, like, I'm a nobody, but then...
Or why does this happen to me?
Yeah, right? And then I think about it more and I'm like, I'm grateful for, like, to be alive because a lot of kids don't get to live through that. Like, they can't fight through it because I had a friend in the hospital when I was going through all that leukemia stuff. He had the same thing as me. Yeah, after I got sent into remission, I haven't heard about him, like, since. But a few years back, I heard from his mom, and she said that he had passed away shortly after I left the hospital. And that hit me hard because me and him were, like...
best friends.
Yeah. And he was, like, just in the room next to me. So I was like, man, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. You gotta be grateful for what you have, because others can go through worse things than you have.
I was, like over the years, I've been thinking about, like, writing some kind of, like, little book or something about what I went through in the hospital. Mm. My mom thinks it's a good idea, but the only problem I have is, like, my memories are, like, fuzzy, so...
At least try it.
Yeah.
Yeah, try as far as you can go. It could be, like, a diary, like what you're going through now.
One of the positive things about the res was that, like, everything was within walking distance. Like, everything was just, like, within a 10-15 minute walk of each other. But here in the city, it's, like, different. Take the bus and ride my bike, and it feels like an eternity when you're trying to get to the place you're trying to go to, because it's a big city. Like, whenever I'm on the bus or something, I think, like, I want to go back to the res or something, because, I don't know, I'm used to both, but I feel like I'm more used to the city. I try to take short showers to, like, reduce water usage. I also try not to waste food because I went on a 3-week camping trip about 2 years back in the summer, and I met this good friend named Daniel, and he was from Africa. He was really funny. Like, he encouraged me a lot. When we were on the trip, this one day we were making dinner, and we made KD, and I accidentally dropped the whole pot of KD onto the beach, and it fell onto, like, some rocks. And this guy, he started crouching, and he ate all the KD off the ground, and I was like, this guy has determination. Now whenever I eat a meal, I always think about him, and I try to eat as much as I can, and I try not to waste it.
Yeah, I try to eat as much food as I can and to finish it. Sometimes it's hard, so I give some chicken to my dog sometimes, and she loves it. But what I try to do is take shorter showers because I have shorter hair. It's just quick and easy. I try to use natural soaps. They're better for your skin as well. My mom drives me, and we use a hybrid car. Not the greatest, but it's something. I do try my best to do sustainable things. I have a water bottle. I don't try to fish, but I'm wanting to. The only person in my family that I know that fishes is my Uncle Ingzi. When a family member would arrive, a thanks to them was giving a jar of salmon. Also, when my grandpa died, at the funerals, everyone would give canned salmon to us. They would get it for free as well.
I never really got to go fishing. Well, I went fishing, like, on the Yukon trip, because I wanted to try fishing, because when I went there, when we arrived at our camping spot, I heard there's, like, some little kid, he caught a really big salmon. I was like, what the hell? I want to try that. And I went to go try fishing, and I never caught anything. I was, like, out there for, like, an hour and a half. I was like, man, how'd that kid catch a fish?
I always, when I try to fish with a fishing rod, I always manage to get my hook stuck in rocks. So then I think it's a really big fish, but it really isn't. It's just a really heavy rock.
Bro, that's what kept on happening to me on the trail. I was like, did I catch something? And when I pull it out, it's just, like, stuck on a rock or something.
Yeah,
like,
it's funny.
Hello, everyone. My name is Haley Stogan. I'm 18 years old, so I just recently graduated high school from West Point Gray Academy, and I'm from Musqueam. I come from what was originally known as the Similano family, where I have multiple people I look up to. However, I mainly aspire to be like my great-grandpa Vincent Stogan and my great-grandma Edna Stogan. My grandpa Vincent was a great man. He was a very well-known medicine man. Him and my grandma Edna would travel together healing people, taking care of everyone. They would use traditional practices in medicine to help out anyone they could. I'm beyond proud to be their granddaughter, but there's also a little part of me that almost feels pressured by it. I feel like I have to be like them in order to make them proud. Or like when people find out that they're my grandparents, they expect me to be the same way, very cultural and connected to the land, but that's not really the case. Living in the city has made it very difficult. A lot of our traditional practices involve using the resources of the land, and that is very difficult to do living in a concrete jungle. My one connection that I've always had is hunting. I started going when I was around 5 years old, and I've loved it ever since. There's a feeling of pride when you are able to bring food back to your community. There's a teaching in our culture that the first of everything you make, or in my case, your first kill, you have to give away. At first, I remember being so upset about it. I was thinking, all of that hard work, and I don't even get to enjoy it. But when giving out the deer meat to the people in Musqueam, I've never felt happier. I gave some to my godparents, and they ended up inviting my family over to eat with them. I've never felt so connected to my culture. Since then, I've been searching for that strong connection and feeling. I finally found it, again, through my art. Over the past couple of years, I've explored the indigenous art style, and so far, I've created a couple of murals. My first piece that I ever did for the public eye is called Passing Down Knowledge. There's a SkyTrain bridge that connects Richmond and Vancouver with a walkway and a bike path on it. And on the north side, you'll find three murals. Mine is the closest towards the center of the bridge. This piece reflects the Truth and Reconciliation Commission happening in Vancouver, which explains why the piece has bright orange background. But the central figure is what's most important. It was inspired by a teaching from my great-grandpa Vincent. In the center, there are two hands with their palms facing together, made of Coast Salish art designs. The activity that my grandpa led was called One Hand Forward, One Hand Backwards, and the idea behind the activity is that all participants would stand in a circle and have their palms hovering over one another. He said that this would transfer the knowledge of our ancestors to the future generations. When I finished this mural, I felt the same feeling I had when I got my first deer, a sense of pride that I hadn't felt since then. Through my art, I was able to speak my truths and hopefully spread awareness about the traumas my people went through. Through my artwork, I not only found a connection to my culture, but also to my great-grandparents.
Hi, my name is Cassie. I'm 14 years old. I'm Cree from Saskatchewan. And I like to jingle dance. Jingle dancing is a cultural practice where I would wear an amazing jingle dress that has bells sewn onto it so that when I dance, the bells ring. Around a year ago, I moved from Saskatchewan to Vancouver to live with my mom. I had to make a lot of adjustments when moving from my small community in Saskatchewan to the city of Vancouver.
What were some of the changes that you had to make when moving?
It was horrible having to move away from my family. I have four siblings and my grandparents that I had to leave when moving here. It was also very hard to socialize. I didn't know anyone here other than my mom. One of the biggest changes was moving from an all-Native school to a dominantly white school. My new school doesn't have any cultural classes like my old school. There's no classes that teaches us how to speak Cree or jingle dance.
Why was it important for you to keep dancing?
It was very easy to get into jingle dancing because of the community I grew up in. I had my auntie that would teach me. I went to an elementary school where they had classes, and my granny would take me to her reserve to dance. While in Saskatchewan, I would dance twice a week. Since I moved to BC, I haven't danced since. It makes me kind of sad because I don't really have anywhere here to dance, especially after I've been doing it for around 2 years. I would usually jingle dance at powwows or round dances, but I'm having a hard time finding any in Vancouver. I'd have to travel kind of far to find any, because nobody hosts them in the city.
Yeah, for sure. And not only is it hard to find people to host powwows around here, but I'm pretty sure it's different as well. I know you mentioned earlier that the drums were different.
Yeah, there is one big drum called the grandfather drum, I think. It is important to me because it reminds me of my culture and home.
Do you have any memorable moments when jingle dancing?
One of my favorite memories is winning $50 in a jingle dancing competition when I was 12.
What do you wear when you jingle dance?
Oh, I wear a navy blue dress, and it had cute silver bells on it, and there was a green ribbon on it, too. I moved to Vancouver really quickly, so I didn't really have time to pack my regalia.
What do you feel when you dance?
Dancing gives me comfort, and I like the feeling of the vibrations from the drum. I feel safe and strong and confident when dancing, and I feel more alive. The idea of people drumming in sync on one drum in the middle is powerful, because you feel the vibrations on the ground going through your feet to your head. When I'm dancing, it feels like home. It feels like I belong. This podcast was created in collaboration with CITR 101.9 FM. It is produced by Hannah Imam in assistance with Cora Thomas, Kiana Mortensen, and Damara Jacobs-Peterson from MOA. Thank you so much for listening.